Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, country, and God. Tonight we're having a special show, which tonight is Thursday, June 2nd, 2016. Having a special show tonight so that we have a chance to interview the Orange County Sheriff, candidate for Orange County Sheriff, Spike Hopkins. Spike Hopkins has been in law enforcement for many years. And he just decided it was time. He's also been a firefighter as well. And he just decided it was time to get more involved and run for the Orange County Sheriff. While I don't, as people know, I don't go out there and endorse anyone for public office, I can tell you that I don't like to keep reelecting the same people. And I see no good reason to reelect the person who's in office today. So I am looking for some better options myself, and so I'm hoping that Spike can give us an earful of why he's running for office, why we should vote for him, and how he can do a better job for us. Not that he's going to say anything against the current. That's up to him if he wants to critique the work of the current sheriff. But for him to tell us why he's a better deal and a better choice. And so what we're going to do tonight... First 5-10 minutes here, I'm going to ask Spike to tell us a little bit about himself. I want everybody listening to the show to leave the show with a good sense of who Spike is as an individual. Then we go into his abilities of Orange County Sheriff as being a sheriff, as a law enforcement officer, and we go through some of the issues that are facing our communities, facing not strictly here in Central Florida. Many of these things are all over the place, but obviously we focus on issues in Orange County here. And we're going to talk a little bit about a constitutional sheriff. We hear that word said a lot, referencing constitutional sheriff, what that kind of means, and go into some of the specifics. If you'd like to ask a question, you can either post it in the chat room or you can call in and ask the question directly to Spike. And the call-in number is 347-857-4364. Make sure you press 1 to speak on the air. If you don't press 1, I think you're listening out there and I don't bother you, and that's the way it is. So if you want to ask a question, please press 1. And with all of that being said, welcome, Spike. How are you doing today? And let's get started.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on here, and I'm doing very well today.
Okay, well, that's good. And, well, we actually seem to have a nice afternoon. The last couple of days, as typical at this time of year, we've had some really nasty storms, so I hope that's going to help our show. Sometimes hearing the lightning and thunder in the background doesn't always help on this type of technology. So that's
and unfortunately, in some parts of Orange County, that could be gunfire.
Not so good. Nope.
Correct.
And you're gonna tell us a little bit about that, what's going on here in Orange County. But first off, go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you just said enough is enough and time to run for office. And then, of course, let people know about your website.
Absolutely. In 1970, I moved here with my family. My father was in the United States Air Force, and he retired at McCord Air Force Base in Orlando. I have grown up in from elementary, junior high, high school, and college. I lived in the Orlando area and most of my professional career. When I was 19 years old, I became an Orange County firefighter. And about a year and a half, 2 years into that, I wanted to be on our helicopter. And to be on the helicopter, you had to be a reserve deputy and a firefighter. So I became a reserve deputy. And during my training, I was out on the road doing the deputy sheriff position when I realized that this was my calling. And though I enjoyed being a firefighter, I really enjoyed the ability as a deputy sheriff to go out. And at the fire station, you have to wait for that call. As a deputy sheriff, I could proactively go out there and help people and get these bad guys off the street without waiting for them to go shoot and kill somebody. So I did that. A few years I was in patrol. I became an undercover narcotics agent. And shortly after that, I realized one of the best patrol methods is getting in the roughest neighborhoods on a bicycle. And I started our bicycle patrol unit back in 1992. And I found out that we actually made an incredible impact within the crime and drug community within Orange County, because not only did we have a community-oriented policing, and that was the good people who lived in that area, we were very approachable to them. We're out on our bicycles all the time. They could say stuff to us, and they actually started giving us tips as to the drug houses within their community and who was doing all the bad crimes in that community. But during that community-oriented policing, we also developed a problem-oriented policing. What that is when you identify people, the small amount of people who are creating the large problem within some of these neighborhoods, and you go after them. If we can get them behind bars, then we can truly make those neighborhoods safe without the good people feeling that they're being harassed by the police all the time. And if, when you mix that community-oriented policing along with the problem-oriented policing, what you do is you get the support and teamwork of your community behind you to rid those neighborhoods of those. So I was very proud of that. I moved up the ranks several times, and at one point I was the commander of our criminal investigations division. At that time I was over every investigative unit. The only two I never supervised were homicide and robbery, but I did all the other ones too, include the sex crimes, the white collar property crimes. I don't want to bore you with my whole list of that, but so I have experience in the criminal investigations division. I was also a SWAT team member for over 13 years, where I left as the assistant team leader. And my last 7 years was, to me, some of the most enjoyable years because I was a night watch commander, which means from 6 at night until 6 in the morning when everybody went to bed and all the brass went to bed, I was running the county at night for operational and administrative duties. So basically, I was the sheriff of the night while everybody else slept.
Well, sounds like you have definitely you've seen the ropes. You know what's going on in law enforcement. You have a very good overview of the whole process and obviously the experience. Now, I do have to ask you just one question, and I'll explain this kind of afterwards. But how much of you were you involved, or have you been involved with the identity theft issue? And some people think it's a victimless crime, but it's not really.
I tell you what, identity theft is one of the fastest growing crimes in America, if not the world. And when I was the commander over the criminal investigations division, part of that was the economic crimes unit, and they reported to me. So I directly was involved with that unit. And I tell you, those detectives never got a break. They were constantly working. And those cases are hard because it's a paper trail. So basically, their reports can be a few hundred pages long when they're following that paper trail to find out who committed this identity thefts and these white-collar crimes. So I do have knowledge of it, and I do know that that's one of the – we lock our doors at night to protect ourselves. We also need to protect our identities from anybody who can get into our electronics or even steal those from our credit cards or just the personal data that we throw away.
Yeah, okay, and I'm not going to explain the reason why I mentioned that is my father passed away in 2012, and I had a situation where I had the people who were supposed to be his live-in caregivers, and I won't go into all the details, but they literally, he had a mobile home. They literally went down to the DMV and signed the title over into their own name, and they filed a fraudulent will down at the courthouse. I mean, they did all sorts of things, and I had all the proof. I mean, I had so much information that this wasn't valid what was going on. And my own frustration was with Orange County Sheriff, who wouldn't do anything about it, and I ended up having to get the Bureau of Highway Investigations, Florida Highway Patrol Bureau of Investigations. They end up doing the investigation because of auto theft of the mobile home, which there's something that just kind of bugs me and call me crazy, but we seem to be more concerned about auto theft than we were about his identity theft and a fraudulent will kind of thing. But that's when I learned that Florida is number one in identity theft.
Yes, and first off, I'll apologize for just being a member of that agency and you telling me that we let you down is embarrassing. Secondly, the reason that they probably went with the auto theft instead of that is, and this is not an excuse, this is just how the numbers are played up there, and that is there's Part 1 crimes. Part 1 crimes are homicides, robberies, auto theft, burglaries, sex crimes, things of that nature. Those are the only crimes that have to be reported to the state of Florida, who in turn reports those to the FBI. So an administrator of an agency, if they can control their part one crimes, they can always go and brag and boast that, oh, look at how I'm lowering crime here in Orange County, where other crimes such as vandalism, thefts, and things of that nature are not reported to the state, and those could go out of control. They make the priorities on these part one crimes and not the part two crimes, which in turn, with your white collar crime, that's not a part one crime. So probably why they did not put the focus on that, which again is embarrassing. It's all about customer service and providing for the people who, the best law enforcement for the people who pay our salaries, and not a numbers game.
Yeah, and that's what it should be. No two ways about it. And in this case, and again, I don't want to be talking about this thing the whole time, but to take it just to one, the next level up is there was notary fraud involved here too, and I was able to prove that. I said, well, my father was having surgery when she did this, so I don't think so. And she eventually sort of the notary halfway admitted that she did, she was duped herself or whatever. I mean, whatever the excuse was. But at a state level, the state of Florida didn't care. They notary fraud, and it's when I learned how little they did about it. And we almost had a bill passed to do a little bit more about notary fraud. I worked with Senator Soto trying to get something passed to help protect us a little bit more. But the state saw all the evidence of what this lady did, and it just wasn't worth their time. And this would have been Jeff Ashton who took no action on it. And I said, so it was no surprise to me that Florida is number one in identity theft and property theft, because notary fraud is pretty much just open season. It's just kind of – it's frustrating. Go ahead.
And you think about it, just being the victim of a notary fraud, that could be anywhere from your house, your vehicle, to your investments and your finances. So the gambit is large. And for them not to consider that a very important crime to prosecute, it honestly, it's scary.
It is. It really was a scary situation. And I mean, it took, like I say, he passed away in 2012, and it was into 2014 to even get anything done at all. And this is, I mean, this is one case. And obviously, there's many other things when we talk about law enforcement. But this is something, the attitude is that it's not a crime. It's not until you're the victim of it, it's not a crime, when it really should be. And so, anyway, and I have the one other story I'll tell you, and I'll make this very quick, because this isn't about me, it's about you. But my experience, I've lived in Orange County all my life. I was born and raised here. And I've had my own frustrations with Orange County Sheriff, to be honest. And
yes, ma'am.
The other situation that was really a major situation was back in 2005, my oldest brother, who suffered with a mental illness, went missing. He went missing. It was Friday evening when I reported it. And the officer came out. He immediately put it into the system because of his mental illness and was doing something with it. But after that, nothing happened. I literally got told by Orange County Sheriff, well, missing persons opens on Monday. We can't do anything. It's Friday night, and we can't do anything about it. They would not release anything to the news media. And here I had Channel 9 was there. Give us a case number, and we will put it out there for you. I could not get anything done until Monday morning when the bank opened. I mean, when Orange County Sheriff opened, the banker's hours. And at that time, you know, people who might have seen him on the bus or whatever else, the bus that he might have gotten on had overwritten the tape by that point. I mean, it was I don't know if the expression, the comedy of errors, but it was very disgusting that he was a middle-aged male with a mental illness, so he didn't count. And we today, I still don't know whatever happened to him.
He's still missing?
He's still missing.
Wow.
Carl Baptist. Yes.
Well, I can tell you this. From my experience as a night watch commander, when we had people who were missing and had mental issues or suicidal things like that, we went out. We made sure the helicopter came up. We had the bloodhound come out. We had to get a scent article. We would do our due diligence to try to track that person down and make sure that they were okay or find out where they were. I can tell you, there were numerous occasions where we did this and we were successful in finding these people who left, or we put out many news briefs in the early morning hours or even prior to the 11 o'clock news with pictures and information to get these people on TV so people could say, oh, I saw that person at such and such and call us. The missing persons unit is, they do have some detectives there, but primarily as of a few years ago, they had a couple civilian analysts who basically, as you said, worked banker's hours, and they were the ones who would put together a bulletin and put it out, or they would do the follow-up during the week. And not until recently did, when I was out there, would we actually get them to come out and actually put out the bulletin sooner than later so we could do our best in tracking these people down and protecting them.
Yeah, in this particular case, you know, I would talk to people. In the last few years, I've talked to them. I said, do you remember a few years back when a young girl went missing in Aruba? And they said, oh, yeah, well, you know, what I think her name was Holloway. I don't even remember. But, you know, I said, okay, that made worldwide news. Everybody on the planet heard about this young girl missing, which was terrible. And her friends didn't even seem to pay attention, which was also terrible. But anyway, she went missing. And everybody in the world knew about it. It was world news. But yet here in Orange County, Florida, I couldn't really get much of anything done for my brother right here in Orange County. You don't know about him in Orange County, but you know about this young lady in Aruba. And it was just kind of, again, just the frustration of how the system works. And again, I don't want this to be about me. Just letting you know that I've had my own frustrations with Orange County Sheriff, and like I said, I'm looking for something a little bit stronger who's going to take care of the people here. With that being said, what was the final point that made you decide to run for the Orange County Sheriff?
Well, I can tell you this. It's been a goal of mine for many years to be the sheriff. I'll say this. From day one, my goal was to save the world, and I did my best my entire career, almost 30 years there, doing my best to save the world and provide the best service for our customers, being the taxpayers. And for the last 7 years or so, I've seen the inner workings of the agency. I've seen what I believe to be the crime going up and the morale going down and the work product going down. And I had enough years to retire, and my words were enough is enough. I am retiring for the sole purpose of running for sheriff. And I'll be honest, the day I walked out that door, I felt like I let the citizens of Orange County down because, as I said, I was going to save the world. And when I left to see the way Orange County residents were treated and the way the crime stats are, I walked out of that door almost embarrassed of my years of service. But I knew when I come back as the sheriff and serve my term there, when I truly walk out that door, I will know that I made that difference in Orange County, and I kept people safe, and I did what we were supposed to do for our residents and our visitors.
Okay. Well, like I said, I'm glad to see people running, and I haven't been overly impressed with the current person there, so I am looking for someone who can make a difference. And, you know, now we can get into some of the other specifics. I mean, I'll give you one last shot if there's anything specific you want to tell people about yourself, but then we'll start going into these specific issues.
Well, here's what I want to say, and I want to say this right off the bat. I am not a politician. I had less stress in my career chasing guys with guns than I do trying to run a political campaign because that is not who I am. I'm a cop who's a leader with a plan to keep Orange County safe, not to go out and do this political stuff that I have to do in order to get back there. When you get me, you don't get a politician. You get somebody who, these are the three things that I want in life right now. I want to be a great husband. I want to be a great father. And I want to be a great sheriff. I have nothing on the outside to sway me or deter me or try to make myself use this position as a sheriff to further myself down the road. And I'll say my wife is an Orlando police officer, and she's got the same three goals. She's a great wife, a great mother, and a great police officer. She has no outside interest. She's not running for Congress or any other political seat where she can be distracted, or either of us can be distracted from our number one duty, and that is to, you know, serve the public.
Excellent. Okay. With that being said, let's get into some of the more specifics about the job of being the sheriff and how you can make Orange County safer. So I've got my three key, my three top issues here are all sort of related, so I'm just going to kind of put them out there and we can talk about it in general. It's like, obviously, what is the role of the sheriff? Then the constitutional knowledge and the personal values. At times, this isn't sheriff specifically, but it seems like too many people, civil servants today, they're in offices or positions that mean you're supposed to enforce the Constitution. They don't seem to know the Constitution very well. And I have one other example on that, but I'll save that for another show it comes to that part of it. And then what is a constitutional sheriff? And so let's, those three things kind of all run together.
Okay. Can you fire away the role of the sheriff? The role of the sheriff is,
correct,
he is the sheriff is the chief law enforcement officer within any county of Orange County, and that, well, I'm sorry, of the state of Florida. So he is the highest law ranking official for law enforcement. He has jurisdiction anywhere within the county, and there are services that the sheriff provides for citizens of incorporated areas like cities that the cities cannot do, and that has to do with serving subpoenas, ex parte orders, evictions, and things of that nature. But the sheriff answers to two people, and that is the voters and the governor. The only way the sheriff can be asked to leave office early or asked to leave office is either by doing something illegal, immoral, or corrupt, and the governor will do that. Or if he's not doing or she's not doing a good job, then the voters vote that person out. And my job as the sheriff is, the buck stops here when it comes to me. Everything that goes on under me, I am responsible for because I am the head of that agency. So what I have to do is I have to lead, I have to coach, I have to motivate, and I have to lead by example to all the employees within the agency. And I'm the one who steers that ship, and we all paddle together, and you know, I steer it into the proper way to provide the best law enforcement service for anybody who is inside of Orange County.
And that's a key part of it. People need to understand the sheriff is the highest law enforcement in your county, including over the police, the chief of police. The sheriff is people need to appreciate what the sheriff really is. Most people, I don't think, fully understand the role of the sheriff in reference to the whole country. And so that's kind of why I talk a little bit about the role of the sheriff versus the chief of police, and then also the constitutional sheriff. When we say constitutional sheriff, some people don't like hearing that. I don't believe the current sheriff is a constitutional sheriff. I'll just leave it at that. But what is your take? And when you think of your job in the Constitution, where you are in reference to the federal government and law enforcement, these things are critical for people to understand the true role of the sheriff.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. When I became a deputy and when I become the sheriff, I take an oath of office. That oath is to uphold and protect the Constitution, the citizens with the constitutional rights. I am also to, you know, uphold the laws of Florida. And so part of that is I, as a constitutional sheriff, I have to ensure that the constitutional rights of our citizens are not being violated. One example of that would be, let's say a president decides to enact a executive order, which is unconstitutional. Me as the sheriff, as a constitutional sheriff, it's my job to ensure that I protect the citizens of Orange County and that unconstitutional federal or executive order is not administered within my county. And there's other sheriffs around the country who have constitutional violations, and they've gone to court and they've actually won. Because the courts have ruled that it is their job to uphold the Constitution, but more importantly, that particular branch was violating that individual's Constitution.
Excellent. Because what you just said, I just don't feel like that happens. I would never trust the current Orange County Sheriff to protect my constitutional rights against the federal government or anyone else. I just don't believe that the person there today would do it. I believe he would do whatever he was told versus being a true constitutional sheriff. And the sad fact is most people don't really understand that. Yes.
Absolutely. And When I started my bid for sheriff, I definitely was well educated in that. So I knew what I was getting into and how, again, it'd be one more of my duties to protect the citizens here. And I'll say this. Let me start out by saying I've worked directly with the sheriff for many years. And as a person, he's a nice guy. I have nothing against him. This election, this campaign is not Spike versus Jerry. This is Spike Hopkins has a better plan to protect the people of Orange County. With that being said, I don't agree with some of his tactics or lack of tactics, and I don't agree with some of his personal or professional policies. And one example is this. A couple years ago, he and Senator Bill Nelson trying to get a ban for assault rifle and high-capacity magazines. And again, I think that solidifies what you were saying earlier, that he is not one of a constitutional sheriff like I would be. One other thing to speak of the Constitution, because Second Amendment is the big thing right now. When I'm the sheriff, I am going to offer classes at my gun range for the citizens of Orange County, and they're going to be instructed by my firearms experts, the ones who actually train the deputies, and we're going to teach firearm safety. We're going to inspect your weapon to make sure it's safe to use. We're going to educate you on the laws regarding firearms. And my goal is that this class will go towards the necessary class for a concealed weapon permit. We have a Second Amendment. It's the right to bear arms and to protect ourselves. And I want to afford that to all of our residents.
Perfect. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure there are those that are listening right now are cheering what you just said, because even when it comes to the Second Amendment, unfortunately, too many people have not been fully educated on what it's really for. As you well know, it's not about duck hunting. It's about a much higher level of security. But we've got a federal government that has gone and made deals with the United Nations on our gun control. I mean, there's this impact of what the federal government is doing, making treaties and deals and whatever you want to call it, even to the point of the United Nations, to try to take away our rights. And it's like, wait a minute, there's a gap here. You don't have the right to give away our rights to the United Nations. And if we have to have that constitutional sheriff, who's going to protect those rights? And this is why I'm talking so much about this, because there's so much craziness going on at the federal level. And if we do not have that constitutional sheriff, I don't know what happens to us at the local level.
Absolutely. And I'll say this. Not only is it your constitutional right, bear arms, but in all actuality, if some person goes into a mall and starts becoming an active shooter, somebody with a concealed weapon permit is going to be able to stop that person or slow that person down enough to prevent more carnage before any law enforcement will be able to get there. So these individuals who are properly trained, you should have that right to protect themselves. Nobody should stand anywhere outside or within their own home and not have the ability to protect themselves, because the bottom line is these bad guys, they get their guns. They don't buy them legally. They steal them. So if we take away the guns from our citizens, only the bad guys are going to have guns. And that's one more score or check mark in their box for being able to facilitate their crimes.
Yeah, well, and of course, that's the most obvious question. It's like, okay, so you think criminals are going to follow the laws and not get the guns? Okay, it makes no sense. It makes
absolutely
sense to take away from the innocent and the defenseless. It's always been something of a crazy. I don't know how those people think, but anyway, we won't go there.
And you know, people say, well, it'll be the wild, wild west if we do this. It's like, folks, that's not what it is. These are law-abiding citizens who want to protect themselves. It's, you know, you go out here right now in Orange County, and look, we've had over 50 homicides in Orange County this year. And the current sheriff has over 400 homicides since he has been a sheriff. So even, you know, with the way he's ruling and the laws in place, you look at all the people who are getting killed out there. So why should you not have the ability to protect yourself? And I'll be honest, I've been to several calls for service where we had a home invasion, and I get there and there's a person laying dead inside the house with a mask on and a gun in their hand who just tried to go in and do a home invasion And they actually shot at the people who were inside. And this person did what the law allows them to do, and that was to protect themselves. They're alive today. The good guys are alive today. And the bad guy is where he needs to be.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where, again, we have to educate people on what the Second Amendment really is about. And I guess we'll ask one more question on the gun stuff. And then, yeah, I need to, for you to give a little bit about your plan, and then I still have some other questions for you. But when it comes to guns today, I mean, what do you think about the current laws about how you have to get a permit or a permit for concealed carry and all these types of things? Do you think any of these trample over our rights to bear arms? What do you think when it comes to, okay, I want to go get a gun, and here's what I should have to go through to do it?
Well, we have to consider this, your right to bear arms, but also the rights of law-abiding citizens, not letting somebody who is has mental issues or is a habitual drug user get a hold of a weapon freely, who could go out and kill those people. So when it comes to doing a background check, I have no issue with that. And something funny about that is, even as a law enforcement officer, if I want to buy a gun in Orange County, there's a 3-day cooling off period. But a person with a concealed weapon permit has no cooling off period. It can actually buy a gun at any time. So if you look at it this way, they've given that leniency and courtesy towards somebody who has a concealed weapon permit where they don't have to wait that 3 days. But it's just, to me, funny that a police officer who carries a gun for a living has to wait that 3 days if they don't have a concealed weapon permit. So I think the government has put some steps positively towards a person who is, again, a law-abiding citizen who has the mental capacity to carry a weapon and use that weapon to protect themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess this would be more of a federal issue as well, too, is our fearless leader up there was coming up with some kind of plan to not let veterans have guns. Coming back, trying to say after they had been, you know, on the front lines, they come back and all of a sudden they're mentally unstable and thus they shouldn't be allowed to have a gun and those types of things. That's kind of a disgusting situation out there, too, playing games with who can have one. But that wouldn't be the same as a background check, though. But it's just, I think it's pretty disgusting when the president wants to do those types of things.
Especially when it's a blanket statement for these men and women who have risked their lives to protect our country, who had access to firearms over there and did not do anything illegal or improper with them.
Yeah,
to categorize all of those people with that, that's not right. I agree there.
Yeah. Now, here in Orange County, what is your plan for Orange County, how you're going to make it a safer place, what the people should do to help out, you know, those types of things?
Well, here's what I've identified from my experience there, because it's been less than a year since I've been retired, and going out and speaking to the community, here's the main issue. Our residents do not see our deputies just patrolling their neighborhoods, windows down, just driving through, making sure everything's okay. When they do have a call for service, the complaint is it takes a long time for a deputy to get there, sometimes an hour, hour and a half. And we actually had one call recently in the Moss Park area where a person was the victim of a drive-by shooting. Somebody pulled up and fired 40 rounds into their house, and it took the agency 40 minutes to respond to that emergency. And I have other stories that I could continue on with. So these are the issues that our citizens have. Now, there's over 130 vacancies, deputy sheriff vacancies within the agency. And when I say vacancies, these are fully funded by the sheriff's budget, but he cannot keep these people on board. He will hire 100 deputies and lose over 100 every year because of low morale, pay, and benefits. And, you know, we have people who recently, a 14-year veteran deputy left to go to a sister agency, the Orlando Police Department, and the day he walked in, he actually got a pay raise. Some of these agencies that are close to us in Orange County, their start out and their topped out pay is a lot higher, and they have better benefits. Also, if you work for the city of Orlando, you only have to work 20 years. to be a retired at an Orange County deputy, you have to work 30 years. So these people have families. They have food to put on the table. So they pick the agency that's going to best benefit their career and their families. And I can't blame them for that. So that's one thing that I need to address. We need to go in there and we need to make our salary and benefits comparable to the surrounding agencies. Secondly, when they get me as their sheriff, they're going to get a cop who's a leader. And I'll tell you this, even as the night watch commander, when I was in charge of the county, I would go out and I would still do police work, not only to motivate the fellow deputies who are out there working with me, but to show them, you know, we can lead by example. And as the sheriff, if I'm going to sit in that office and make decisions on how my deputies are going to do their job, I'm going to know how to do that. And that's the difference between myself and the current leader. He's been in management positions, high management positions, for about 25 years. And I have no doubt he could not go out there and just do the basic functions as a law enforcement officer, where I am different. I'm a leader. I'm a hands-on leader. I can run the agency. I have the experience to do that. That means a lot to the men and women who are out there risking their life every day, that I'm willing to do that. And I'll say this, when I become sheriff, every Friday night, I will be out on patrol with my men and women doing what the taxpayers pay them to do, and that's to keep you safe. So my point on all of that is we have got to get this manpower level up. That's why it takes so long for deputies to get to calls for service. That's why we never see deputies patrolling people's neighborhoods. When I get that, my first day in office, I have a plan that will bring 40 deputies from other divisions immediately into the patrol division. That will be an increased amount of marked cars and unmarked cars patrolling your neighborhoods. The other plan I have is a all-hands-on-deck approach, where I take people from other parts of the agency, ones who are not on patrol, like detectives, and I take one detective from each squad. I take somebody from the motorcycle squad. I take somebody from the canine unit. And I have a group of 25 deputies at my disposal that I can put into the areas where we believe crime trends are starting to occur. It could be 10 of them go to a certain part of the county for residential burglaries. Another part goes for a robbery detail on the other side of the county. So that's immediately 65 deputies on the street day one that will give a higher presence. So these bad guys out there, I want them to see us. I want them to not even do the crime because of our presence. Do the crime, we're going to catch them for doing that. And the 25 deputies I spoke of from other parts of the agency, they will come out for a week at a time. And then the next week, they go back into their specialized unit, and one other representative from their unit will come out and do this immediate task force response. And the reason for that is, if these deputies are coming out of the investigations division, they're detectives, I don't want them to get far behind on their caseload to where they can properly service the victims of crimes by investigating their crime and making an arrest on it.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And it sounds like you have a solid plan on what needs to be done, which is encouraging as well. And I mean, it sounds like you really have to beef up the force again, because there's a retention problem. As you say, for every 100 you get, you lose 100. So I can understand how that would be a major problem. Excuse me.
Yeah, going back to my – that's how – right now, deputies who are in the patrol unit, they work 2 weeks in a certain part of the county, and then they get flip-flopped every 2 weeks to a different part of the county. And that, by doing that, they do not learn the rhythm of the community that they are servicing. So when I become sheriff, my deputies will be permanently assigned to the areas that they work every day. They're not going to get flip-flopped around. And the reason being is, I want these deputies dedicated to certain neighborhoods, to where people who live in that neighborhood know that deputy by name, and that deputy knows the people who live in that neighborhood. We have got to work together. We cannot do this job and catch bad guys successfully without the community support, involvement. And part of the transparency that I have is, you know, if they're working with this same deputy day in and day out, and vice versa, the community, we can understand what each other's needs are and best handle those. When I say a deputy, you know, knowing the rhythm of their community, if a deputy's patrolling a residential neighborhood at night and he sees the same red El Camino drive down the street at 11 o'clock at night, I want that deputy to know that that's Bill and he lives on Main Street and he works a late shift, and that's why he comes through this neighborhood late at night. So he doesn't go after and start following this person to see what they're up to when it's, you know, a normal law-abiding residential citizen there. I want him to be able to know the cars that don't belong in the neighborhood and who should not be in that neighborhood. So, and part of the transparency that I speak of is this. I'm sure anybody who lives in Orange County has seen our helicopter circling their neighborhoods, either in the daytime or the nighttime. They have no idea what the sheriff's doing out there. They see a lot of police cars. They see the neighbors, the helicopter. So what is your first instinct? Grab your kids, go inside, lock your doors. If you have a gun, maybe get close to your gun, just because you don't know if there's a homicidal maniac out there or what's going on. When I become the sheriff, I'm going to have an app that will put out a message to the community where the helicopter is flying over, which will basically say, the helicopter's in the air, we have activity on such and such street, so they at least know the street that this is occurring on, and basically say, we're looking for a three-year-old child who just walked away from their house, and this is what she's wearing. Now, my residents don't go inside their house and get their guns and lock their doors and hide for cover. They actually go up to the street, and they help us start looking for this child to get that child back with their family. On the other hand, if we have a call where somebody breaks into a house and we put that information out, if I put information out that we just had a suspect wearing a orange sweatshirt break into a house on such and such street, if they see somebody like that running through their backyard or hiding around their house, they know exactly who that person is and what we want them for, and they're, again, going to be our eyes and ears and call 911 and help us arrest these people. And as I tell people, this is your community. This is your neighborhood. I, as the sheriff, am providing a service for you in this neighborhood, but you have the right to know what goes on in your neighborhood. This is where you live day in and day out, and that's where my transparency will come in to keep them up to date on what's going on in their neighborhood.
Well, and I think that ties into one of the other topics I was going to ask, was the public attitude towards law enforcement. I mean, we've obviously seen some really bad stuff on in the news in the last couple of years, and we've seen, you know, the sad fact is not every law enforcement officer is going to be perfect. You're going to have some who do things they shouldn't. At the same time, we've got this other attitude floating out there, really much of it being promoted by those in political office, to go out there and condemn the law enforcement. So, I mean, what has been your overall, I'll say, cause and effect? You being out there in Orange County today, have you felt that type of treatment or attitude from people? Or I mean, I don't think it's happening. I don't think it's a problem here in Orange County, but then I'm not in your job, so I don't know.
I can tell you there's many times that most of my career I worked in the rough neighborhoods, and even my last 7 years as the watch commander, whenever I went to shootings or other crimes of violence and they were in these neighborhoods, I would, you know, we would get yelled at. We were the bad guy. And these people, especially some of these politicians who have this hug-a-thug mentality of, oh, you know, these kids, they only go out and kill people because they don't have night basketball and nobody's there to give them activities to do. And they blame that on the police instead of the core, and that is their parents not being there, or they don't have the adult supervision. That's what I don't like, is when we get blamed for what the bad guys are doing. And even though it's the bad guy who actually controls the entire situation, they're the ones who are either going to give up peacefully or they're going to fight us. They're the ones who are going to give up peacefully or pull a gun on us. And we only react to the actions that they force us to react to. So that in itself is something that caused me 6 years ago to make a presentation to the agency for body cameras. And my goal with this is there's many points on why we need body cameras, and this is what I explained to them. First off, it protects the deputy from false allegations. Secondly, it protects the citizen from any of those deputies who do wrong. And I'll be the first to tell you that in my career, I have worked with fellow deputies who are absolute jerks, who do not treat the public right. And when I say that, I'm not talking about abuse and brutality, but I'm talking, they talk down to them. They act like the victim's bothering them more than the deputy wants to help them. And when this deputy has a camera on them, I want one of two things to happen. I want that deputy to either conduct himself in a professional manner, you know, giving dignity and respect, knowing that he's being videotaped and audiotaped. But there will be some deputies out there who, even though they know they're being recorded, will not be able to control themselves. And as sheriff, that will give me the ammo that I need to confront these people and tell them, you know what, I don't think you have what it takes to be an Orange County deputy, and you should probably find another career. So just those two points alone, it's a win for the police and win for the community. Also, when we can capture great evidence, the state attorney is more likely to prosecute the case, and the defendant is more likely to plea out and not go to trial, seeing that he was, you know, his actions were recorded on video and a jury's going to find them guilty. And I can tell you this, now with the electronics and the cameras in cars and on people, I personally found that if you try to have a case in front of a jury, if you do not have video evidence of the crime, then these people more likely are going to get off and be found not guilty by a jury, because they always want to know, well, where's the video? Why didn't you have a video? So
yeah,
I presented that to the agency. 2 years later, I actually went out and bought my own body camera, and I used it for a few years until the agency came out with a policy that said you can't use your own cameras. So I even had a face-to-face conversation with the current sheriff a few years ago about cameras when our county mayor tried to buy cameras for every deputy. He still did not want them. And again, I could never understand why he would not want to use the tool that is going to protect his people more than it will hurt his people.
Yeah,
it will show to the public we are doing a great job out there.
Yeah, I personally think the body cameras are need to be there. I mean, the technology is out there. You can get – people have cameras every which way, and it really does – it truly does keep an eye on the cop as well. It defends the cop from the wrongdoing charges that they get, so I don't see why they wouldn't want it either. It doesn't make any sense to me, but okay. The other thing, and I know you needed to leave about 8 o'clock. I may ask you if you can hang on for another 5 minutes, 10 minutes. There's a lot of stuff here to cover, or we'll have you come back on. But
right.
Excuse me. The other stuff that is more national, if you will, but impacts us locally, and what is the constitutional sheriff going to do to help us? We have, there's the issue of sanctuary cities. Orlando is not one of them, but there's also illegal immigration and law enforcement. What is your take, or what is your role as a constitutional sheriff when it comes to these illegal activities that are going on around us? And some of them, what's going on with this refugee program, which, of course, I guess I don't really know what the role of a constitutional sheriff is when it comes to this refugee program, where they're putting massive people into different communities, many who are not properly vetted, or they're vetted by the United Nations, who may end up being more to do with ISIS and whatever else. You don't want to be paranoid, but you also got to be realistic about what's happening across this country when it comes to homeland security and those types of things. So what do you see your role as a constitutional sheriff when it comes to that next level of issues?
All right, well, first let me explain that most sheriff's offices, the sheriff is actually in control of the jail, the county jail. Orange County is not one of those type setups. Orange County government is the one who controls the jail. So if we do take a prisoner there and book them and we leave them and the jail finds out that they're an illegal alien, then they have their own standards and procedures on how they deal with immigrations on that person. And that's not an option of the sheriff. Secondly, With the amount of crime that is going on in Orange County right now, I have to be honest. My main focus is to start reducing this violent crime and making the streets safe again for all of our residents and visitors before I even try to tackle this immigration issue. Now, when I say that, we are not going off right off the bat, go out there and proactively start stopping people, checking their green cards and checking their papers. Again, we don't have the time, the resources or manpower to do that. I'm going to be focused on crime. Secondly, as the sheriff, I have several deputies assigned to the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force. I also have my own intel unit. So they will be tasked with any of these refugees who have, we don't believe, have been properly vetted to come into the area. They can do their type of research and follow up and try to vet these people better than the mass vetting that goes on somewhere else in the United States. So I do have resources where we can do that. And we also have one or two deputies who's attached to ICE, and they're part of their task force, which they would be included in this. So we won't neglect or not worry about these people, but we will fight that battle a different way through some of our task force that we use.
Okay. And I know it's a big question to ask, and it's one we'll probably follow up on another interview at some other point, but it's just from what I've been being told and what research I've done on it, it appears that Florida is has some of the highest level of refugees coming in. And, you know, with everything we see going on out there, I don't think it's being paranoid to be concerned that we have an element, especially when there's truly no homeland security as far as who's coming in over the border, legally or illegally, you know, who comes into this country and things like that. And there's many of us, I'll say for myself, I see there's going to be a time, I don't know when it's going to happen. Lord only knows. I hope it never happens. But with everything that's happening, the unrest in the world, there's going to be some kind of uprising here, whether it's going to be ISIS, who has embedded themselves in different parts of this country, that something major is going to happen. Now, we have a National Guard, but I also know that the sheriff is going to play a key role in all this stuff too. And maybe that's something we can have save for another show, because I know we're kind of running out of time here. But I really do want to kind of get into that perspective, because I think people have a reason to be concerned of what's going to happen in the future.
Right. And let me just address that in a real quick manner, and that is this. My deputies will receive more active shooter training and their response to active shooters than they are receiving now. One of the things I'm going to do from day one is our SWAT team is going to be a full-time SWAT team, and they will be at the ready for any incident like that at a moment's notice. And secondly, they are going to give all deputies in our agency a higher level of training in the response to active shooters. That way we will have the best trained police force in responding to this, no matter if it's at a mall, at an amusement park. Our deputies will be, again, very well trained on this, and we will have that SWAT team at the ready to go and address those issues at any time. And that's just a quick answer, a long question.
Yeah. Okay. And like I say, hopefully you'll come on for another interview before the primaries come around, and we can get into a little bit more detail on that. And I'm gonna I open the line a little bit more for people to ask some questions. So far, I'm keeping an eye out, and I see people sitting out there, but they haven't pushed the button yet. But I'm not sure I'm going to have time to take any calls now anyway. We're just about running out of time here. But the other thing, too, and this was, you know, we had the two different cases, the Bundy Ranch and then the thing in Burns, Oregon. Property rights, eminent domain, the Bureau of Land Management. I mean, as I study the Constitution, and you correct me if I'm wrong, the Bureau of Land Management really isn't a constitutional authority. There's something seriously wrong, and again, this is the role of that constitutional sheriff against the unconstitutional actions of a federal government, to come in and seize people's property. And in fact, my understanding is they end up killing the one guy out in Burns, Oregon. and this type of thing. So what are you going to do? And I don't know how much that's the likeliness of that happening right here in Orange County, to be honest. I don't know, you know, I don't know, crazier things happen, I guess. But when you see these other things, I say, okay, constitutional sheriff, what would you do in one of these kinds of situations? Or have you, or you don't see it as a risk here in Orange County?
Well, you know what? I never want to say I don't see anything as a risk, because I want to be ready to respond to any type of situation. But as I said right off the bat, is as a constitutional sheriff, I want to protect the constitutional rights of our citizens. So this last year has been very busy for me running a campaign. So I've put a lot of my effort and time and focus towards that. And I'm vaguely familiar with these cases that you speak of. But here's what I would do is the sheriff's office has a legal department, and we have about four attorneys and several paralegals who are up on case law and up on law. So as the sheriff, my first response would be to go to them and say, what is our obligation? What authority does this, you know, whatever federal agency is that comes into this, and do your research and educate me as soon as possible on their rights and the citizens' rights, and we'll come up with a plan to address it at that point.
Okay. That's the main thing, is you won't stand on the sidelines and just watch, because that, apparently that's pretty much what happened in both of these cases. The sheriffs in those communities were not willing to get involved, or they were more of a part of the federal government versus the local government, is the way I was seeing those. But we'll save that for another day, too, to go into maybe a little bit more detail. But the main thing is you won't sit on the sidelines. You will protect the people, the constitutional rights of the people of Orange County. And I think that is so critical.
Absolutely. And one thing, not only is it a professional courtesy, but it's a safety factor that I would, part of my position as sheriff is to notify any federal agency, if you are coming into Orange County to do any type of operations or an arrest or serve a search warrant, that you notify our agency before you do. And that is because, first and foremost, if it is something that's egregious, as we spoke of earlier, I am not going to provide them any of my deputies to go out there and violate the Constitution, and I'm going to start my research on it. And secondly, if we get a call for somebody doing a home invasion and we go in and see somebody with a gun and shoot them, and it turns out to be a federal agency serving a legal search warrant, you know, I think it's for safety reasons that we need to know what's going on inside of our county so that doesn't happen either. So we work together and not against each other.
Okay. Okay, well, that makes sense. Now, again, we are getting close to the 8 o'clock mark here, but one more question for you, and then I'll let you give a wrap-up and make sure you let people know where you're going to be at, how they can meet you, and also your website. But you mentioned you had been in narcotics, worked in narcotics before, and well, I think we all know what's going to be on the ballot again. It's about marijuana. How do you think marijuana, I know what my take is, but I just want to hear your take on what's going on with the use of marijuana. What is it? What's the impact on law enforcement and those types of things? And I mean, you can say if you support it or don't support it, but I think I know the answer.
Let me give you an overview. First off, what worries me, the only thing that worries me about medical marijuana is this: if it's not well regulated, and that is, you know, you go to California where it's any doctor can dispense it or prescribe it, I should say. And if I go in there and say, "You see, hey, doctor, see this hangnail? It gives me a lot of anxiety, and I need some medical marijuana to calm me down," and they give out a prescription for that. That's sort of like our pill mills used to be here, and it's definitely an abuse of that doctor's power to write a prescription. I believe there are some people in this state who are in such a medical condition, whether they're dying from cancer or have some other type of disease, that this might be their only way to gain comfort or get comfort or not be in pain. Those people, I would have no problem with the state doing that. I just don't want it to be widely abused for these people who make up bogus symptoms or bogus conditions to freely smoke marijuana throughout the state.
Yeah, but Florida already allows medical marijuana anyway right now. So it just seems like this other, whatever they're trying to change is to really push it more to a recreational, indirectly. Like you said, it's going to be abused because we already have medical marijuana here in Florida. Charlotte's Web.
Right, but that's but my understanding of that, and again, you know, this last year has been busy for me running a campaign, but my understanding of that is even people who are cancer patients and other type hospice type situations are not being prescribed that. And again, I haven't been paying close attention to that because of the campaign. So if I'm wrong, please correct me, but that's not of my understanding right now.
Okay. Well, we are hitting 8 o'clock right now, and I do thank you for taking some time. This has been good. Hopefully you'll come back on because, as you can see, we can easily talk a lot more on some of these subjects, and I'll start getting more people to call in and ask all the questions too. This is not my regular time slot, so but we're going to post this all over the place, and I did post some links out there for you already so people know who you are. Any last words of wisdom you would like to share with us? Tell everybody what your website is. If you happen to have some event coming up in the next few days or whatever and you want people to join, whatever you'd like to share as a wrap-up for your candidacy.
Well, first and foremost is, if you're a resident of Orange County, you see every day the amount of violent crime that goes on, and that's just from what you see on the news, and that's only the tip of the iceberg. A little over a month ago, our sheriff started a task force against violent crime, and it took him over 7 years being in office to finally do that, and again, with over 400 homicides under his belt, it's an election year, and he now decides we need a task force. And since that task force has been formed, about 6 more people have been murdered. Multiple people have been shot, and there's been other victims of home invasions and crimes and things. I am the only candidate who actually has a plan to reduce crime and restore order in Orange County. I am the one with the experience, the training, and I have run these operations throughout my career with success. So that's what you get from me. You get a cop who's got a passion to serve and to protect you and your family. And when you vote on August 30th for me, you're saying we are tired of a politician running this agency. We want somebody who's loyal to the community and is going to do what we pay them to do, and that's keep them safe. My website is www.spikeforsheriff.com. I'm on Facebook under Spike for Sheriff. I put out videos on my Facebook posts a couple times a week as to the current events and what my plans are. My email address you can get from the website. And if you have a group of 10 or more people, I will come to your house. I would rather do this grassroots and speak to you eye to eye what my plan is than learn about me on a mailer or some type of TV commercial, because I want you to see how genuine I am. But more importantly, I want you to ask me the tough questions on how I'm going to handle this this epidemic of crime that we have, that our people are living in.
Well, that sounds good. And I did extend an invitation to you to come to the Goldenrod Safe Neighborhood Association meeting. We have it this third Thursday of the month. And yeah, I think it would be great if you could join us. We get a sheriff's report every month about what's happening. We get through the association, through our emails, we get notifications if there's been burglaries in the area and different things going on. So I think that would fit perfectly into what you're doing too, as to what your plans are to improve safety and what, you know, what can be done in the 32822 area code. That's what the South Goldenrod Safe Neighborhood area is. So hopefully you can come there and meet with some of the people there and talk some more about what you want to do and what you see are the biggest issues in that part of town. You might be able to give us a different look on that. So okay,
I definitely want to do that.
Thank you so much. Yes. Yes. And I look forward to seeing you there. But anyway, thank you again. I know you got to run. Good luck with the campaign. Keep us posted, and hopefully you can come back on and we can carry on this discussion a little bit further.
I look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank you. And for those of you listening out there, if you want to talk a little bit more about the Constitutional Sheriff, we can. This is You know, as I mentioned earlier, this is a special show. I don't typically have a show on Thursday. So if there, or if there's anything else you want to talk about, hit the button and let me know what you're thinking. And we'll go into some other stuff. The key with this is the constitutional sheriff. And I felt comfortable with what I was hearing in reference to Spike Hoppins being a constitutional sheriff. I was impressed with his overall position on some of these issues. And some of them we couldn't get into as in detail as we would like because of the time limitation. But I'm sure we'll have him back on and we will talk some more. So, anybody out there want to join the discussion? Hit the button, let me know. Or possibly we will wrap it up for today and we can call it a day if you don't have anything else. Dr. Tolbert, I know you were passing me some comments, text messages throughout, and if you have, I know you liked some of the things he was saying as well. So if there's anything else you want to discuss too, you know a lot about the Constitution of Sheriff as well, and I'm kind of going through your text messages right now to see. Okay. Right now, like I said, doesn't look like too much more, but I'm going to put one other thing up here. I was out there, if you go to the 10thAmendmentCenter.com, it talks about the constitutional sheriff and what a constitutional sheriff is. And so it might be worth it for those who aren't as familiar with that aspect of it. People need to understand the sheriff is the highest level of law enforcement. And we need to appreciate what the sheriff brings to the table in reference to some of the things that happen at the federal level. We need to demand that the sheriff be a constitutional sheriff. I personally, and as I said earlier, the current sheriff of Orange County, I don't believe is a constitutional sheriff. I believe he will do what he's told by the federal government, regardless of its constitutionality. And we really, times are changing right now, and it's so important for people to understand this. The, let's see, here's just one of the things. I'm reading this off of the site. Americans are facing the stark reality that their constitutional rights are being shredded. Nearly every action taken by the federal government today violates the Constitution that sheriffs and the military have taken an oath to defend. The sheriff may truly be the last hope for saving our constitutional republic and our liberties. And I think you need to really think about what that means. That is so important. And good old Thomas Jefferson, the values of the Constitution, there is no honorable law enforcement authority in Anglo-American law so ancient that as the country sheriff whose role as a peace officer goes back at least to the time of Alfred the Great. And again, this all comes back to the basics of what a constitutional sheriff is. So please understand that piece. Make sure you ask the right questions and you know who you're voting for. So with that being said, we will wrap it up for tonight. And thank you for tuning in. Share this information, especially those of you here in Orange County. Make sure you share it with everyone you know. And ask the tough questions. Go to the different events. Don't sit on the sidelines and see what happens. Get involved. This is, as Spike said, this is your community. It's your obligation to know what's going on. And he's going to be the one who's going to share it with you. He's not a politician. He's an outsider in that respect. So, you know, I was impressed with what I was hearing, but I do have some more questions. And we'll have him on the show again, and we'll drill into some of these a little bit more specifically and take it from there. So thank you again for tuning in. Have a nice evening, and God bless America. Thank you.